absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Hello, people. Hi, once again. Sorry for that. The show is sponsored by the FantasySportsBookCasino.com hotline, .com website, and the hotline is also 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you want to talk to me. We have a chat room. The chat room is always open for your pleasure. What you put into it, what you're going to get out of it. Just bring it, and I'll hopefully you enjoy it. Now, I talked about draft day, and I went to see it yesterday morning. Okay, we're going to be talking about that the movie. We're going to be talking about the Pacquiao fight. We're going to be talking about some football and some baseball and like I said, and some boxing, because this, what's going to happen between of the winner of this, and if it's going to lead into a bigger fight. We're going to be talking about all that. But first I want to talk about draft day. Now, draft day, I went there yesterday morning, and it's about the capacity of the multiplex in one theater I went to is about 105 in this particular theater, okay? Not the whole theater, just where I was watching draft day. So about 10%, a little over 10%, I guess it was about maybe about a dozen people or so in the theaters, and we got quite a few empty seats. Now, I imagine because it opened up on Friday, that it was quite a few people on Friday night, but there was hardly anybody in it first thing 10 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday morning. I do note that a lot of guys, I would assume a lot of guys went to the movie on Friday and dragging their girlfriends, and that was the exact opposite on Saturday morning. There was only one female. She sat about four seats away from me. I was surprised, but hey, she was there, and it seemed like she enjoyed the movie as much as I did, if not more. Now, I enjoyed this movie a lot because the simple fact is I'm not a dummy, but it's good to watch the inner workings of the mindset and the how different teams' philosophies on using their draft picks and what they think of a particular player that they want to draft and where they want to draft them. Now, this movie is not totally accurate, but it's very close to it. Now, some of the stage props may not be accurate, but that's not the whole crux of the movie. You got to get the whole view and scope of the movie to know exactly what's going on, and it's very enjoyable in my opinion. I would say that I would give it an 8.5 out of a 10, because the acting was pretty good. I think the characters were realistic, and that the people in the movie really looked like they enjoyed what they were doing. You know, sometimes you watch a movie and you can see that the actors aren't really having a good time, and they're paid to act, but they act like they don't really enjoy what they're doing. These people in this particular movie looked like they were having a good time and really played their movie. I'm not going to give you the whole crux of the movie. I encourage you to go watch the movie, because I think you, for those football fans, they'll get they'll enjoy it. Now, it's a movie. Understand that. It's not going to be totally accurate, but it's pretty close. Pretty close. Now, and for entertainment purposes, it's a very good movie depicting what the inner workings, like I said, and the thought process of different organizations in relation to their draft picks and the players that they want to pick in those draft picks. We're going to be talking about, like I said, some NFL, some boxing, some baseball, and whatever else comes up. So, first of all, let me talk about this, because I really like to talk about this. Unfortunately, I got busy last night, and I was only able to see one round, and it happened to be the last round of the Manny Pacquiao Timothy Bradley Jr. fight. This time, the Filipino got the decision he so richly deserved. Now, I watched the last fight of the two, and obviously, two of the judges, if you follow boxing, are no longer judging. Boxing matches. They voluntarily left, and I put that in quotation marks, they voluntarily left the judging part of boxing because of their controversial scoring in that fight. Pacquiao was masterful in giving angles and beating Bradley to the punch. The judges had it unanimously on favoring Pacquiao, 16-12, 18-10, and 16-12. That was the first defeat that Timothy Bradley suffered, and he said he injured his right calf in the first round, but he congratulated Pacquiao after the bout. After the fight and he was getting interviewed in the ring, you know, you really didn't have to say, "I injured my calf." So he said he wasn't making an excuse. He deserved it. But that was like a backhanded slap saying he deserved it, but I injured my calf. So, but from what I understand, and I'll be watching the fight sometime in the near future when they replay it on, quite naturally, because they always do, replay it on Showtime again. And I'll be watching it. And be able to see the other 11 rounds get a better feel. But from what I understand, that Bradley came out gangbusters in the beginning, kind of tailed off in the middle rounds for the most part, and Pacquiao took advantage and, pretty much dominated the fight. Because if you see the scoring, 16-12, twice and 18-10, that's pretty much dominating the fight. This definitely wasn't what you saw Pacquiao back in 2008-2009. But he boxed pretty smartly. He caught Bradley. He caught Bradley a few times. And then when he was in danger, he pretty much spun his way out of it. The promoter, Bob Arum, was so giddy that he went on a bizarre rant, ripping Floyd Mayweather and reporters who said are afraid to lose access for not ripping Mayweather and his team. This is a quote from Arum. Right, all you want about 15-1 fights with no hopers and all this thuggery where when I'm doing a promotion, they make the MGM put up signs for the stupid fight, Arum said. You guys continue to do that. We'll give you quality fights. HBO will give you quality fights. But you want to close your eye to the thuggery in this sport. Now, it was impossible, I'm reading from an article here, for reporters at ringside to get Arum to speak about Pacquiao's performance. He went on and on about the May 3rd Mayweather fight with Marcos Maidana, insisting it is a bad fight, and he blasted Mayweather's team for strong-arming the MGM. Pacquiao and Bradley fought significantly better than he did on Pacquiao said Bradley fought significantly better than he did on June 9th, 2 years ago, about a little less than 2 years ago. And that he barely hurt him with some shots on the chin. But Pacquiao outlanded Bradley 198-144 and connected on more power punches than Bradley had total punches. 148-141. Pacquiao said of Bradley, he threw a lot of punches, but I didn't want to get careless. I picked up more steam in the second half. I made the adjustments that Freddie Roach gave him in the corner. Now, Bradley threw 627, but only landed 22% of those. That's not good. Now, also, the trainer of Bradley, Joel Diaz said the right calf injury limited Bradley the rest of the fight. Instead of using what he did against Juan Manuel Marquez in October in boxing, using his boxing skills, Bradley decided to try to slug it out with Pacquiao, which, you know, and I keep on saying this. When you fight a Hispanic fighter, most Hispanic fighters, most of them, come right at you, stand right in front of you, and try to play that machismo game and to wear you out like that. So if you're a boxer and you can move and box, you can take advantage of that because that person you know is going to be in one spot. So if you have boxing skills, you have the skills to move your feet, you can do a lot of things to offset someone coming right at you constantly. You can move and slide, dip and dab left to right, and avoid the type of straight-on aggressiveness that you get from most Hispanic fighters. And to go away from that and try to slug it out is you're grinding right into Pacquiao's wheelhouse. You're not dictating the fight. Pacquiao's dictating the fight, and you're falling right in line with like most Hispanic fighters like to do. And if you're not equipped to handle that, you're going to be on the losing side of that, quite obviously. And Bradley clearly was. Pacquiao, I'm saying, from what I understand here, from what I'm reading here, he wasn't completely on his A game. He was a little sloppy. But because Bradley went away from what he normally does, he never really threatened with much. This is, I'm just reading this now, and I'm assuming that instead of using your boxing skills, you, and for lack of a better word, you step your way down to fight the same type of fight that your opponent is stronger at, which makes no sense to me. So, quite naturally, Pacquiao did what he had to do. And the judges cooperated and did their jobs. I mean, it was pretty much, let me put it this way, that this fight, in my opinion, from what I've heard, from what I read, was pretty much handed to Pacquiao by Timothy Bradley Jr. because he had decided to fight the Pacquiao way instead of using his boxing skills like he did against Marquez. Why? I'd have to fault the trainer for that. Because the fact is, it was a unanimous decision, and the trainer decided to go toe-to-toe, to prove a point that this guy can go toe-to-toe with Pacquiao. The object is to win the fight. I don't care if he had to dance for 15, 20 rounds, quite naturally it's not. It's only a 12-round fight. But the object is to win the fight. You're the champion. Pacquiao has to come to you to take it away. Why are you dictating or why are you giving Pacquiao what he wants? By stooping down, for lack of a better word, stooping down to his level rather than box at your level. Absolutely makes no sense to me. I have a hard time just understanding and figuring out why he would do something like that. But It is what it is. And the thing about it, like I said, Bob Arum. And this is a quote for Bob Arum. Because he made these remarks after the fight. And I'm gonna read this because I wanted you people to understand what's going on here and what's happening. And you know Bob Arum is trying to force a super fight between Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. And then I'm gonna read something on Facebook that a friend of mine, my co-host, my host on the No Chaser Show, posted earlier today. And I have the reason I'm reading it because all of it makes sense. Bob Arum, and this is a quote from him on yesterday's press conference following the fight. The only people that make Floyd Mayweather fight Manny is the public. If they boycott the nonsense on May 3rd, that's what the public should do. If the media want that fight, tell the public not to buy pay-per-view and not to buy tickets. There is no strategy. We are prepared tomorrow to sit down at a table with his people to work out to get conditions for the fight. Arum has recently steered clear of criticizing Mayweather, but was incensed this week by seeing countless banners and signs promoting the Maidana fight around the MGM Grand property, right in the middle of his own attempts to amp up publicity for the Pacquiao-Bradley rematch. That prompted him to go on a series of acerbic attacks, first of all on MGM management, and finally, after Pacquiao's comprehensive victory on Mayweather and his advisors. Now, for the most part, it was entertainment, the sort of verbal vitriol that boxing has strived upon for years. Sadly, however, the rant included this veiled and likely unintentional racist rip against Mayweather. Write all you want about 15-1 fights with no hopers, and all this thuggery. Now, I said this before. We'll give you quality fights. HBO will give you quality fights, but you want to close your eyes to the thuggery in this sport. Now, the reason I'm saying it's a unintentional and likely was an unintentional racist remark. It's because when Seattle Seahawks cornerback Richard Sherman was described as the thug following his outburst about San Francisco 49ers rival Michael Crabtree after the last season's NFC Championship game, it sparked an intense national debate about the appropriateness of the words uses described a black athlete. When challenged about his repeated use of the word and asked whether it was appropriate, Arum completely dodged the question. The ring is squared. This is a quote from him. The rules for conducting a prize fight are immutable. There are no real issues. While Pacquiao was meting out his personal version of poetic justice for a poorly scored 2012 fight against Bradley, Mayweather was a few miles away, relaxing in a hot tub with a bunch of female admirers, at least according to his Instagram account. Yet, apart from the question of why he exactly needed a fire pit by the jacuzzi when it was 82 degrees outside, the nagging question of why he won't fight Pacquiao is hopefully one which will reach his ears soon. Unfortunately for Arum's agenda, a mass boycott of Mayweather's bout would do more harm than good. But if fans of the sport deserve the right to see the two shining lights of this generation in combat at last, even if it's a half decade after it should have first happened. Aaron wasn't exactly slick with his delivery, and his thuggery comments deserve criticism. But he is on to something here. Mayweather is called money for a reason. And for as long as the public keeps swallowing up the one-sided snooze fest he serves up, brilliantly technical though they are, he will happily accept the minimal risk paychecks for as long as they present themselves. Now, he's taken all comers except for Pacquiao. So some of these guys at one point were undefeated, but he's taken on all comers except Pacquiao. And the politics of boxing is causing this not to take place, meaning Pacquiao versus Mayweather. Maybe it will happen before Floyd walks away, but I'm going to read you something that Mac Williams, host of No Chaser, said on Facebook, because I think it's pretty poignant in what we're talking about here. The Floyd Mayweather, and this is from Mac on Facebook, the Floyd Mayweather versus Manny Pacquiao fight will not happen. Why? Number one, Aram criticizing Floyd's fight all week leading up to Manny's fight with Bradley. Number two, Aram is Manny's promoter, and he won't let Aram be involved in the fight and make money off of it. That's what I'm talking about, the politics of it. Manny's fight with Bradley was exciting only to those who want to see Manny fight Floyd, but otherwise it was a lackluster performance of two boxers who could not knock each other, who could not knock out each other, no matter how hard they tried. Number four, Floyd does not need to fight Manny for his legacy or to define his career. Let me say that again. Floyd does not need to fight Manny for his legacy or to define his career. Number five, listen to this one carefully. Floyd does not care what people think about him or who he chooses to fight. It's his career. The fight won't happen, so keep begging, keep hating. He's going to leave Manny, Roach, and Bob Arum high and dry and call it a career. And you and everybody will spend the rest of your lives complaining about it. Meanwhile, he will be in the Boxing Hall of Fame and will go down as the best ever, win or lose. He's punishing those guys, and he's enjoying every minute of it. Now, I have to tell Mac that this is well said, and I don't think he has anything to prove. I mean, he's taken all comers. He had laid down the groundwork for Pacquiao. Pacquiao didn't agree to it. He moved on, meaning Floyd Mayweather. Clearly, the two camps don't like each other. Golden Boy Productions and Showtime, maybe not Showtime, but Golden Boy Productions with Floyd Mayweather at camp, and Bob Arum under who Manny Pacquiao's under. Now, if for some reason Pacquiao went away or discounted, let me put it this way, if Bob Arum wanted to step aside, if he's so worried about Pacquiao getting a fight with Mayweather, step aside, Bob. You're the one. Floyd Mayweather is the champion. You want to fight Floyd Mayweather? Then you got to come with the right things in order for Floyd to accept the challenge. Not the other way around. So, Floyd Mayweather, you got to come to Floyd. He's undefeated. He's the biggest draw, not Manny. He's been the biggest draw, not Manny, for a while. If you really want this fight to take place, and I truly believe this, if he really wants this fight to take place, then step aside, Bob. Let Manny take the fight. You don't have to be involved. Your fighter will get into the fight, and you can. You don't have to be. If you want him to get into the fight, step aside. That's all I can tell you. Step aside and see what happens, and let your fighter fulfill his dream. I was dream, but fulfill his destiny of fighting Floyd Mayweather and take away that undefeated moniker that Mayweather has. But you have to step to the champ. The champ doesn't have to step to you. Mayweather's on top. I understand that Pacquiao now has a championship, but come on. We all know that Floyd is the draw. Floyd's the big draw. And quite naturally, if you add Pacquiao, it's going to be the bigger draw. But Floyd can draw fighting these other fighters because he's Floyd Mayweather. One, because people like watching Floyd fight. And two, people hope are looking to see if Floyd's going to lose one of these fights, or hoping they lose. So they want to be there and watch it to watch it. So that's all I can tell you there. Let's move on. Let me get out of this boxing, because I went on to boxing besides almost 10 minutes without of silence, and I apologize for that. To move quickly and briefly into baseball. Now, there was a game last night that the New York Mets were visiting in Los Angeles and playing the Los Angeles Angels. Now, I'm going to read another article to you because I think it's significant, and I want to talk about it because it could have escalated to more than it was. There are countless reasons not to reach into the field of play during a baseball game. And a Los Angeles fan learned the hard way last night. In the eighth inning of last night's road loss, New York Mets outfielder Curtis Granderson caught a pretty routine fly ball near the right field corner. Just as he turned to throw the ball back, he felt the hand graze his back from the stands. It was a bro, meaning it was a fan. Say whatever you want to say. Cheer, clap, cheer for your team, cheer for other team, but just don't physically touch the players. That's what Curtis Granderson would later say. At the very moment, though, Granderson wasn't having it. He immediately turned to face the fan, and the guy's name was Blake Griffin, and chewed him out. Is this actually newsworthy? Well, fan encroachment in baseball has a pretty lengthy and violent history and has even altered the course of baseball history. The fan in question last night was thrown out, and Granderson was reportedly given the option to file charges. So what the incident lacks in severity, it makes up for in potential volatility. Here ends the lesson for today. Now, that came from an article from Yahoo.com, and the person's name was Adam Chandler. A fan reaching in onto the playing field and touching a player on the field of play as the play is going on. You know, nowadays, these fans seem like they're getting more and more touchy-feely with the players and feel that they can, just because they buy a ticket, they think it gives them the right to do anything they can possibly want to do, and not think that these players are human beings and that they'll have adverse reactions to that. I have to applaud Curtis Granderson for immediately addressing that. Immediately addressing it. Immediately addressing it, for the simple fact is, now that fan's going to think about it. Hopefully that fan won't do it again. And maybe he'll think about it, because that could have got ugly. Because once that fan touches a player on the field, all bets are off. That player could turn around and knock the out of that at fan, for the simple reason he touched them on the field of play, which the player is supposed to be off limits. So in essence, he took and made the fan aware. You know, you're lucky I'm not someone else for one thing. And he said, don't do that again, because you can get hurt doing that. God knows what he said to him. But I hope he put the fear of God on him and let him know that you just can't go around doing that to people and expect to get away with it, because the next time, if you think about it and do it, it may not turn out as nonviolent as it turned out with Curtis Granderson. So, for all you fans out there who think that these athletes are just a piece of meat, robots, you can say and do anything you want to them, think twice. Think twice. I know fan is short for fanatic, but you don't have to be idiotic and do idiotic things, because it can backfire on you very quickly. And all it takes is one guy like Adam Jones, who in an interview I think it was on a New York station, said flat out, don't come on the field. Don't touch me. Don't come on the field. You're going to regret it. Meaning, if you come on the field, you're trespassing. And if you're trespassing, he feels he's got every right to defend himself, because he has no idea who you are and what you're about. So you run into a player like that, and you may not get the Curtis Granderson treatment. You may get a Mike Tyson type of treatment and get knocked it out. So remember that. I've never thought, and you have to think, you have to see the mindset of these fans, the arrogance of some of these fans to think they can actually do whatever they want to do, when they want to do it, because they're fans and they pay the money. They pay the money to come watch their favorite player and team play. That doesn't give you the right to do anything you want to do within the stadium. You came a rational fan. You were a rational fan before you walked into the stadium. So you lose all common sense and rationality, and come out, and wherever you sit, you think you can do what you do and say to whatever player you want. You're there to enjoy the game. A lot of kids come to these games and they see some of the craziest behavior from grown men and women at whatever sporting event it is. This is in fact in baseball. But you see even wilder things happen in football games. Hockey games are not that bad. They're enclosed in the glass. But the fact is, learn to control yourself, because the simple fact is, once you step on that field, once you put your hand over that railing and touch a player, you don't know what reaction of that player is going to be. You don't know if what kind of life experiences that player may have had. And when you touch him, those life experiences may result in a not too pleasant experience from you for you. So remember that. You know, I have a... I want to make a phone call real quick to a Redskins fan that I've been wanting to do for a while and get his reaction on radio. I think he'll get a kick out of it. I think he'll enjoy it. I'm going to call this number and see if I can get my fan on the line. And that's not it. See if I can get my fan on the line and get his reaction to the things that have been going on with the Redskins. Let's call. Let's get a special call out and see what happens. Like I said, this is a special fan. A little surprise for you today, people. See if he answers. Hello?
Hello?
Hello. How you doing there? How you doing there, son? This happens to be your dad. And welcome to the master plan. And I'm calling you. Let me do this first before we go any further. I'm calling you from the Fantasy Sportsbook Casino.com hotline. And I want to welcome you to the master plan that I do every Sunday morning at this time from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. And the reason I'm calling is I want to talk about your Washington Redskins. How you been?
I'm good. I'm glad to talk about the Skins.
Okay. Well, as you know, there's been a lot of things going on with the Skins. They grabbed Andre Roberts. But I really want to talk about the one, and it's probably a controversial thing, but I think the Washington Redskins, especially in D.C., I don't know how many Redskins fans you have in Delaware, are really excited about
many.
Not many. I figured that most of them are Philly fans. Am I right? Philadelphia
yeah.
Eagles fans. Okay.
A lot of Cowboys fans too.
Okay. This is another team in the NFC East that gives another weapon to Robert Griffin III, who has a lot to prove with a new coaching staff. DeSean Jackson. Coming. He's going to be wearing number 11 because you know who wears number 10, and he's not giving it up.
Of course.
And along with Pierre Garçon, Alfred Morris, Jordan Reed, now you have DeSean Jackson and new acquisitions, DeSean Jackson and Andre Roberts. What are your thoughts on your newest acquisitions, starting from Andre Roberts and ending with DeSean Jackson?
How can I put it? They're big acquisitions, definitely. But I think mainly what I'm happy about is that they're addressing the offensive line. Because
okay.
You have those receivers, I mean, they can get open, but there's no time to throw them the ball, then it doesn't matter. So once you have an offensive line, acquisitions help and a change in philosophy from the zone blocking to more traditional blocking. But I like it. I mean, Sean Jackson's going to stretch the field. He you can't just, you got to have to put a safety over top of him at all times, no matter what. So that gives somebody a game plan other than Robert Griffin and Alfred Moore. So going to put some defensive coordinators in the quandary. I like Andre Roberts. He's going to play a slot. Don't have to. And I like that. I like him there. He's going to create some mismatch problems because we go with three receiver sets. It's going to be hard to match up. You have to worry. You have to go into your nickel. You have to match up with them. You got to worry about Robert Griffin. So that Alvin Moore is back there running the ball. So, but yeah, it all depends on the offensive line. I'm excited. Everybody seems to be happy, especially Robert Griffin. Now Shanahan is gone, so it's up to him now.
All right, now, seemed like they put some acquisitions in place on the offensive side.
Mm-hmm.
I have an issue, and maybe you can help me out. Maybe you can sway me one way or the other. They kept the defensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still in place, even though the coaching staff came in. They kept the defensive coordinator, so they pretty much got an offensive coach and with an offensive philosophy, and it told them that we're keeping the defensive coordinator. And I guess you're going to have to deal with that. I'm not a big fan of Hazlitt. I have never been a big fan of Hazlitt. I think his defensive philosophy and his defenses are overrated. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Hazlitt. I've never been a big fan of him. I'm guessing they wanted some continuity. I mean, in his defense, he didn't have anything to work with in the secondary. He had no safeties at all.
Right.
Injuries on the offensive line. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Metal. I would have been happy to see him go. I'm kind of indifferent to see him stay. I mean, we got some defensive pieces. We'll see if it was the scheme or if it was the pieces that we had last year. But yeah, I rather would have seen him go.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to call you and get a brief, your brief thoughts on the your Washington Redskins. And I know I had texted you earlier. For people who don't know, this happens to be my son, okay? Happened to be going down to see him very shortly, and I wanted to give him a little surprise that put him on my show and have some thoughts on his Redskins. And this is not going to be the last time I call him about his Redskins, especially during the season. So I just want to give him a little taste of what my Sunday program is all about. Usually I have someone else on here, but today I don't. I have a co-host, but he's not available right now. But that's fine. I can run solo. I just want to get your thoughts. I also wanted to tell you that, and I had said it earlier in the show, that if you're a big football fan, and I'm going to tell you guys again when I see you a little later today, you're a big football fan. I went to see it yesterday morning. Draft Day is, in my opinion, a good movie. Some of it's predictable. Some of it you can see what's going to happen coming. But overall, for entertainment purposes, and you like that, to see that action, Draft Day, it is a very good movie to watch. So hopefully you go see it soon, and hopefully you enjoy it. Let me put it that way.
Definitely.
With that being said, I'm going to see you in about I'll be leaving here in about 45 minutes.
Yeah,
so I'll be seeing you soon. Huh?
Cool.
All right. I'll be seeing you soon, probably between 1:30, 2:00, somewhere around there. By the time we get down, it could be sooner, but be seeing you soon. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys. I haven't been down there in a while. See how fat or thin or old you guys have gotten. Especially my grandsons. I can't wait to see them, man. I'm really pumped up to come down there because I want to get out of Jersey for a while. So I'll see you guys soon. Love you.
All right, Pop. Love you too.
All right, man. Bye.
All right, bye.
right. That was my son. I wanted to get him in here and give him a taste. Trust me, people. You will hear from him again. He is a diehard Redskin fan living in Delaware around a bunch of, like he said, Philadelphia Eagles and Dallas Cowboy fans. So I'm going to be calling him from time to time, maybe throughout the summer leading up to preseason games, and quite naturally on this leading into the season and during the season, because I want him to be able to get his perspective. So I'm going to have I plan to call. I have my son that's a Dallas Cowboy, a Redskins fan. I have another son who's a 49ers fan. I have another nephew that's a 49ers fan. I have brothers that are fans of different teams that I'm going to get my family involved during the season on their perspective of their team from Sunday to Sunday. It may not be every Sunday, but they'll be in and out this season. I'm going to put them on notice that I'm calling you. I want to get your perspective, your team. Give me an idea of what your team's about leading into that Sunday, and we'll go from there. So, and believe me, just like my son, my brothers, my nephews, are all into football, and they'll give you, because they follow their team, they'll be able to give you a more in-house perspective and tidbits of their team, which can help, quite naturally, which can help you in the fantasy when fantasy football comes around. So believe me when I'm saying I'm trying to give you as much information from a lot of different sources that I possibly can, and hopefully it'll benefit you in the long run. Now, I got 3 minutes left in the show. Let me talk about my team, my baseball team in fantasy baseball. Unbelievable that I am doing so horribly in fantasy baseball. But it is what it is. Right now, I am in a bad quandary here. There's 20 categories. There is 20 categories that you can win. And depending on the amount of categories, depending on, quite naturally, there's 20 categories. In order to be able to win, you have 11 or 9, at least 11 categories won. Well, as it stands now, it looks like I may be able to win 7 categories out of 20, which is not good, not good at all. But I play Victor next week. He has a very strong pitching staff. My staff is relatively strong. In fact, for the last 2 weeks, my pitching staff has done better than my bats. And I have Joey Votto, Pedro Sandoval, Ryan Braun, Andrew McCutchen, Alex Rios, Matt Kemp. No, I have some decent bats and sprinkled along this. I have Billy Butler, who's a all-star. I have an up-and-coming second baseman shortstop, who's Brad Miller, who's doing relatively well. He's not doing well this week. Another supposedly breakout guy. And it's a long way to go. We got 22 weeks, this past 2 weeks, so we have 20 weeks left after this. Chris Davis. So, and Howie Kendrick from the Angels. But my pitching staff is doing better than my hitters. So hopefully the hitters can catch up with the pitching staff and give me a better showing than I'm showing now. Looks like out of 10 teams, I may be on the bottom. And there's no place else to go but up, and we'll see what happens. But until then, I'll keep you informed, let you know what's going on. I guarantee you, I'll let you know what the general outcome is going to be for next week. About this time, Victor and I will pretty much have an idea of who's going to win the matchup. But tune in next week, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Master Plan, as always, will be here, and we are out.